everybody, and welcome back to Sapphic Survival Guide, where we are happy to be queer to answer your questions. I'm Gina.
And I'm Cheyenne.
And class is now in session. We have another guest today. They are the author of some books that Cheyenne and I are big fans of. So please welcome Kristen Arnett. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for having me. My name is Kristen Arnett. I use any pronouns. I identify as a lesbian or queer. And I'm a full-time writer of like lesbian / gay Florida books. and I live in Orlando, Florida. I'm a proud Sagittarius and I write about gay shit.
Yeah. It's so funny that you said about Florida, because I was looking through one of those Goodreads suggestions of like one book per state. And I had already read With Teeth when I was looking through this list. And then when that was the one for Florida, I was like, wow, I guess that did happen in Florida, but what a representation. It's like the only book for Florida was With Teeth. I was like, that's hilariously amazing. It was so funny to me. So I love that that was the first thing you said. It's like, they're Florida books, because that's how it's marketed.
Are you from Florida? Very specific kind of Florida, is With Teeth. I am from here. I'm third generation. Okay. From Central Florida. I've only ever lived here in Central Florida, except for like 6 months that I lived in Vegas for a writing residency. It was interesting because it was, it gave a lot of the same energy as living in Orlando, I feel like, living in like a tourist destination where people come visit and leave. A little more
desert water.
Yeah,
less water.
Yeah. What was your queer journey like in terms of growing up and coming out? Like, what was that like for you?
I grew up in a very conservative evangelical Southern Baptist family in Central Florida. And didn't like it. It was not a like an easy thing coming out to that family. So I am estranged from my biological family. Most of them all still live in Florida and Central Florida, but it was, I think it was a really hard process for me, because it's one of those things, like for many queer people, where it was like how much am I willing to make myself uncomfortable or upset or unhappy in order to make the people in my life that are close to me comfortable. So I spent a long time, like I spent many years, like not being like out or like compromising a lot. And so I just got married in February, to my now wife.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Previous to that though, with a partner that I had, like my family just like would not acknowledge that she existed. Like they would lived in the same town. They would like run into her at like the grocery store and it would be like, we don't know who you are. And it's like, I'd been with her at that point over 5 years. It's like a thing where it was like, they were like, well, we accept you. We just don't want to like talk about that. And I'm like, well, then I'm dying here. Like, I can't do this. So it was, it ended up being a thing where I was like, I'm not willing to compromise in my life anymore. Just because you think that that's what compromise is me like making myself less so that you don't feel uncomfortable. So strange, but I'm the happiest I've ever been. I feel very glad to be like an out queer person in Florida, because we're a space that there's a ton of queer people that live here and we have a very specific reputation and a really horrible government. So it's very special and important to me to be like a voice and an advocate for like queer people in Florida and live here. So it's like very convoluted. There's like a lot, I don't know, and like anybody's like journey to coming out, it's just like, what a hot mess. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like I'm learning something new about myself every day and I'm like 43. So
I love that.
It's inspiring and like beautiful to hear that you're like the happiest you've ever been right now, because when you're in like the thick of it, it's just like grief.
Yeah, it's very hard. And I think it like also it makes a really relationships really tough to be in a situation where it's like, there's nothing you can do about any of that. You can't control how anybody's going to react or behave, even if it's people that you love and you hope that they would behave differently. So it makes it doubly difficult, because relationships are always like, right, they need like nurturing and work and support and love, care, and that makes it really hard when there's like people that are attached to it that are like not offering any of those things or empathy or kindness. So
And I know you refer to them as like your biological family. Would you say you have like a chosen family?
yeah, I do,
Yeah,
I would.
totally.
I think that's a big part about me being in Florida too, is like we have a huge like kind of queer DIY culture here, I feel like, where it's like we might not have spaces, but we're gonna make them. Like we have like what I call here like gay IHOP, which is like just like, right, like there's like people who like got hired as management who are gay, and so then they hired gay people, and then people come in that are gay because you know that, the space is yours. So it's like, it feels like scrappy. It feels like people are like, I can make this space my own if I like work really hard at it, or I bring like other people who are looking for community space in here. So yeah, I have a lot of like very close friends who I would consider my family that I celebrate like birthdays and holidays with, and like, any like special occasions. I'm officiating like a wedding at like the end of the year for like some of my friends. It's like a special thing, I think. And like, right, like it's like chosen family is very important because, like, I don't know, it's like we need people, we need each other. It's like, I don't know. So I do, I have a very large extended chosen family here that is very important and special to me.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
How traditional was your wedding in a sense? Like, was this quote unquote a gay wedding? Did you follow like typical wedding procedures or?
Yeah, I mean, we tried to like mix it up. We kind of wanted to have it be just fun, but also we wanted it to be kind of a big party. So we invited, like, we have a bunch of, my wife and I have a bunch of writer friends. I would say like 90% of the people just like all came from out of state, because we were also being like, come to our big gay Florida wedding. Like we were having it like here. We're like, we had like so many people who were like trans and non-binary, like tons of queer people. Like we're like, this is going to be a space, like I want you to see like how this space can be a good space, and like a space
So
that's there
cool.
to like support, like love and engage with like who you are as a person. So it was like very important that we had that. So yeah, we had like 150 people, and we had my wife is very close with her family, so her family was all there, and I consider them my family now too. They're very supportive and great. So we had like a lot of that same kind of stuff, but then like we did our own vows. Like my friend Tommy Pico, who's like a poet and he also is like a TV writer, he wrote for Reservation Dogs. He like was our officiant, and so he had like this whole like really fun thing, like riff he did about like love and how disgusting it was up front, which was great. And we didn't have like traditional, like we didn't want to do like bridal parties, so we did what we called like VIPs. Like
Ooh,
I have like
cute.
my two best friends, because one of my best friends is non-binary, and then my other friend, sadly straight, was in my wedding. And then
The token straight person.
yeah, no, I was like, you're gay by association if you're in my wedding. But which, I mean, we had made out before, but she is not straight. But yeah, and then like my wife had her sister and her best friend, who yeah, they, it was a lot of fun. But it was like, yeah, mostly it was like we had like a really tiny short ceremony and then like a huge party. So that's like what we
Sick.
really wanted it to be. It was
That's
a
the
lot of fun.
ideal wedding. So, like,
Yeah.
no, I mean, people are there for like the ceremony kind of, but like that's like not the fun part of the
Yeah,
wedding.
it was like,
Anyways.
I was like, I want it to be a party. We wanted it to be a party. So it was like very, very short ceremony, like people just kind of screaming and cheering the whole time, which was kind of cool. Like it was great. And then yeah, just a big dance party afterwards. And I was like, this is it. This is fun. So
Perfect.
it was great.
How long have you
That's
two
so
been
fun.
together?
We've been together, I guess our anniversary is like we call our anniversary like Valentine's Day, because like I got drunk and slid in her Twitter DMs. And was
Classic.
basically like hitting on her then, so we call that like our anniversary. So it'll be 6 years this like next February.
And is she a writer too?
She's managing editor for the website Autostraddle.
Oh,
Yeah,
sick.
so she did like, her day-to-day job is like gay writing, and then my day-to-day job is gay writing. So we
That's
both like
cool.
work from home and
Just
then
in
do
it.
like day work. Yeah.
You have a gay workspace
Exactly. Yeah, it's like whole house
for
is like just like gay
sure.
workspace.
I love that. So when did you first like realize that you were queer or a lesbian, or like how did that look for you?
It was one of those things where I think many people probably have this realization where there's like stuff that like feels like weird to you, and then you notice maybe other people aren't reacting that way, and then you start asking yourself, why am I reacting that way if nobody else is acting that way? So there were just like things all through growing up where I was like just confused all the time of behavior, especially because so much of my life was centered around church and very specific gender roles. Like how I was supposed to dress and what I'm supposed to wear. And I would say one of the big things for myself, which I know this is like not necessarily having to do with like, being a lesbian, but like all the time I would be like, because when I was growing up, we did not really have any money. And so I always felt like all the time I wasn't performing like femininity right because we were poor. I'm like, I don't have any money, so I can't dress the way that like other girls do, and I don't look right, and that's what's wrong. Like, I don't know how to do like makeup or hair, and I'm not like friends with all these girls in this way, not because of anything wrong with me, except for that we don't have money. And then my sister, when she was older, had no problems with doing that stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, this is like not that, something else. But I also just, I had huge like crushes on like all my friends. Like I was you'd be like, oh, I just really, there's just like a great friend, but then I want to talk to them all day long, and I spend all my time with them, and I only think about them ever. I think I was like very deluded in a lot of ways because I was like, certainly this is just a normal thing. Like I'd feel like so weird changing clothes in front of other girls and thinking like everybody's feeling really weird about this. And it was like, no, I'm just the only one feeling pretty weird about this. And then like trying to be so appropriate. Like, I'm not gonna look at anybody's body. Like I'm gonna be so respectful. And it's like, okay, you're the only one that really cares about this right now. And then it was like, I don't know, too. It's like some of the stuff where it was like, when you're figuring out your body and like learning to like touch yourself or things like that, it was like, what was I thinking about when I was doing things like that? And that I'd be like, huh, okay. And that was like, was a really a huge turning point for me because I was like, why would I think about that? Like, why would I think about that? And then I was really stressed out about that. And then my junior and senior year of high school, one of my very closest friends, because I was in show choir in high school.
Of course.
Yes,
The
of course.
final nail in the straight coffin.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, no, I just do theater. I just do musicals. Was like, she was like, I would say she was like my secret girlfriend in high school. Like, obviously, we weren't going on dates or anything, but like, yeah, when I'd spend the night at her house, we would do stuff together. And then I was like a very quite horrible, I would say, breakup like senior year when she was basically like, one of those things where it's like, I don't think we should ever speak to each other anymore. And I was like, I think I'm dying. Like, it changed my like entire college plans and like what I was doing. So it was a lot of stuff where it was like,
Whoa.
I think even if somebody had asked me at the time, like, are you gay? I would have been like, of course not. Like, why would you even think anything like that? Even when I knew all this stuff about myself, because I think you can be like really self-delusional. Like, if you really want to, you can make yourself spin anything. So I was like definitely spinning that for a really, really long time. Like, just sure that I was not. But again, yeah, absolutely, I was just hella gay all the time.
Were you I don't know how like attached to your faith you were versus like the household and like community you were raised in, but do you think part of it was because like you were like this is a sin or like you were like I couldn't be a good Christian
Yeah, I mean,
like
I
that?
think that that's a really great question because some of it was like something's wrong with me maybe spiritually, because I had like such a hard time relating to faith the way that like it seemed like everybody in my household did, everybody at church did, everybody I was around all the time, because we were always doing church related stuff. And I was like, why can't I feel this? And I was like, I think some of what I equated to being like wrong with me, which when it came to like my sexuality, I was like, this is because I'm like not right with God. Like, I haven't figured this out. And if I can figure this out, then that's going to fix all this other stuff, because that's like obviously what's wrong here. So, I mean, a lot of that was like, these are all just disparate things. And also just being a person and asking questions. And so much of that specific religion that I was raised in is very much about not asking any questions. It's like very completely like having an emphasis on total trust and faith. And it was like, my parents definitely knew I was gay. Like they definitely like, because I mean, one of the things that happened to me at one point was like, you know, when you're like, you think you're being sneaky or you're being careful about stuff, and you're definitely not. And also as a teenager, so I'm sure that I was not. The clothes I like to wear were not like clothes that like my family really wanted me to be wearing. Like junior and senior year, I really got into like, I bought like from the sales rack like these like men's cargo pants from Old Navy, and I wore them like constantly. I had like those like Doc Marten like brogue shoes that were like very intense. Like I talked my mom into like getting a haircut that was like very specifically short, because I was like, look, it's this like actress, because it was like late 90s at the time. And then it kind of like grew it out into this like very dyke looking haircut, and like wore a sweater vest constantly. Like I was looking very specific, and this was like a time of Ellen like first happening. So
But you're
like,
probably like, I'm a theater kid. What? Like, I
exactly. I was
wear
like, but
quirky clothes.
I thought I was being like, I'm like, surely no one knows. They can't see through this
A
facade.
thespian, not a
And your mom's like,
lesbian.
why are you wearing a sweater vest? We live in Florida.
Exactly. Truly. She was like, she's like, you need to go change. You look like Ellen. And she like, that was something that she
Oh
would
my
say to me
God.
like constantly. And I'm like, oh, well, certainly she doesn't know any of this. It's like, and I think if I'd even asked my mom at the time, she would have said no. But like they did towards the end of like my time and like living there in high school, I like came home one day and there was like a pamphlet for like conversion camp
Oh
like on my
no.
bed. And I was like, okay, just like let's reel it in, like let's get it together. Let's, because that's like something where it's
That's
like
so
you're
scary.
really very specific. Like, yeah, I mean, my family, like the church we were in was like, we're part of the Southern Baptist Convention. Like when I was like in third grade, like my parents took us out to like picket outside the abortion clinic. Like we used to have to do like a lot of stuff. And a lot of that stuff happens here in Florida. So like maybe that's like full circle again for me being like, it's really important for me to be here and be doing and like advocating for the opposite of that shit, because it's like very intense. And I know there's other like people who are like me, like who are like young like that, that like need other people like me to be here and be like, that not everybody's like that. Not everything's like that. Your life is like not necessarily have to be conversion camp and your mom telling you you look like Ellen, go change and put on a skirt or something. But
And I think we hear so many like stories of, oh, once I grew up, I, moved to such and such, and there we're in the era of like, oh, the Pink Pony Club. I left Tennessee and I went to LA. And it's like there's so many people who A, still live in their small towns because that's what works for them, where they ended up, where their job is, where their family is, for whatever reason. And B, there's always going to be queer kids in all of those communities, even if all the people grow up and leave. Like, that doesn't mean that we're not going to have more in the next generations to come. And so, as easy as it is to just go big, I'm going to join all these bigger queer spaces. And I'm such a hypocrite because I'm saying this from New York City. So I'm like totally one of those people. So, but it's important to like have the advocates in those smaller towns or even just other non-big cities that have that space so that every person and kid feels like they can go to the IHOP or whatever and feel seen, you know?
There's so many queer people everywhere, like just every place you go. So I think a thing too is that I'm like very hyper aware also, like growing up without any kind of money or anything, where it's like, it's, I think it's like a huge fallacy to be like people have the opportunity or option to just like pick up and move somewhere. Like we all know that that's like not the case like financially for so many people. So it would be like such a like being like, oh, well, why don't you just like, you know, move to a different space? It's like, okay, are you going to like teach this person like thousands and thousands of dollars? Are you going to give them a job there? Are you going to like, and the fact we all know there's like all kinds of bad shit and homophobia and serious shit happening every single place that you go. it's not like all in these like places like the South or the Midwest or Florida. It's like these things
They're
are
just
kind of
loud. I'm
loud
in
about it. Florida's just
Pennsylvania,
loud.
and I'm like, I don't really think that this is like the most queer friendly place to live, but you know, I'm working with what I have available to me. I don't have the money to relocate, so I'm here, just trying to, you know, make it more of a safe space for people. Have you ever had like a debate with yourself about whether to stay or go? Like, have you had to kind of wrangle with that?
I think too, I always have liked being here in terms of my writing. I think that was the thing that like really ended up swinging me in the direction of wanting to like stay here, was that like so much of my fiction and essay work when I sit down to write like really is like Florida coded. Like it's like very embedded. It's very like part of what I'm doing. And I think that there were times I've been like, especially I would say even too, like a few years ago when I took that residency that was in Las Vegas, which was a great residency. If any writers are listening to this, it's a Black Mountain Institute. They give you a bunch of money and you can go stay there. So apply for it if you're a writer. But I, at the time, was like also just starting to date my now wife. And I was like, she's lived in a bunch of different places. Like she grew up in Virginia, but then she lived in LA, she lived in Chicago, she went to Michigan for school. When she and I met, like, she was living in Brooklyn. So it's like a thing where I was like, okay, well maybe I should like try like bopping around a little. Like I could do some residencies and stuff. Like we don't have to be like necessarily be here all the time. But the more I thought about going somewhere else and the more I would come home from places, I would be like, I really feel like I want to be here. Like it felt like there's places I've gone where it's like I love the people. There's like so many places I've been where I'm like, I love all these people. I appreciate this place. It's like so great. Like so many cool cities with like lots of good shit. And I love going to visit. But it's like when I come home, I'm like home. Like I'm like, okay, this feels like where I want to be. Also, I am like a swamp rat. And every time I go someplace that doesn't have humidity, I get a nosebleed. Like it's like when I was in the desert, I was like, Jesus, I had like
I never
so
thought
many
about that.
humidifiers, and I was like, I think I'm dying. I
Wow.
think
It's so funny. I lived in Arizona for 5 years and then coming back to the East Coast, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like chewing on this air. So I feel like the opposite. I'm like, oh, I miss the dry so much. That's so funny to hear. I was going to ask if when you did that residency, did you feel like you had like writer's block? Were you like, I'm not in my surroundings that inspire me, and I know I don't know how to write anymore.
I mean, at the time I just had like Mostly Dead Things had just come out like the year before, and I'd done like a very extensive tour where I'd traveled around a lot, and I had in the middle of that like sold my next book I'd sold with Teeth and like a short fiction collection to like Riverhead, which is like Penguin Random House. And I was like in the middle of doing that book, so I was in the middle of edits, and so I was kind of like, when I first got there, I was like, I'm doing it. I'm living like a writer's dream. I'm editing, I'm looking at this work. I've got this book deal that's like very cool. And now I'm a real writer, even though I like had been a writer. It was like I like we could tell myself I was like very serious. And so at first when I was there, I was like, I wasn't having any trouble because it all kind of felt like a little like a fantasy. Like it felt like it didn't feel necessarily real. So I felt like I was in this like very exciting space, like, right, gifted this residency, given a bunch of money. Here's a like a free condo to stay in, and you don't have to pay anything and just work here. And right. And I'm like, wow, this is how the other half does it or something. And then when we got there in January of 2020. So like a couple months later, it was like lockdown, pandemic. And then it was like, and also it was the first time that my now wife and I had like tried living together because I was like, I got this residency. And she was like freelancing at the time. And I was like, you can just come and we can see how it'll work out and it'll be fun. And then I was like, we're trapped in an apartment together. Don't like each other.
Crazy.
But and then I was like, I missed home so badly. And I couldn't write anything. I was like, oh, this is like the fantasy like stopped very abruptly. And then it was like, oh, I don't even have like, I can't look out the window and see like animal. Like today, literally today in my backyard, four raccoons came and took like baby raccoons came and took a bath in the bird bath today. Like I can look outside and see animals. Like there's a snake that lives out there. There's like a million lizards. There's like everything feels wet and juicy and green. There's thunderstorms. There's everything feels like very alive to me and very fresh and very like it's a lot, but I'm a lot. And maybe that's me being a Sagittarius. But I like to, that's like I really want things to feel like excessive a lot and like feel like really immersed. And being in the desert felt like a lot, but it felt like a lot of intense, like there's like nothing, like I couldn't find things that were alive. Like there are no birds really, and there's like no like animals. And I was like, I am having like, because so much of my stuff is place rating. So I think that like I realized that after that like very beautiful like moment of being like a writer at a place. And then I'm like, oh, I need to go home. Like I can't work here. And I worried too that when I got home, maybe it would continue. And I think it, as soon as I kind of got home, which took way longer because we couldn't leave, couldn't leave the residency. So I don't know. I got home and then was able to work again, thank God. But it was like, yeah, it was very tough being there, and I think I was ill-equipped.
And I wonder how
Was
much of like COVID and like quarantine going on affected that, because like you're not seeing anything alive, you're not seeing other people, you're hearing about COVID taking so many lives. Like it just seems like so intermixed.
I couldn't do anything. I could not write a single lick of anything. I thank God I'd already turned my edits in. Those were away from me. So I was like, well, a book is written. It's like with my publisher. But I couldn't write, I couldn't read. And I've always been like a huge reader, which was like such a like a respite for me growing up, because like when I felt like so terrible with my family, there was like books for me all the time. Like I could escape into books. And I was like I felt like even during the middle of that I was like I can't escape into this, like I don't even have the luxury of like crawling into a book because my brain is like it was like so terrible. Yeah, people are dying, people are sick, like you hear like the news isn't like, well, the news is horrible every day still, the news is horrible. So it's like a thing where I was like, oh, I need to like work with my rewired brain to figure out how to like be a writer and be still processing like a lot of this like very terrible, very real stuff. Because it, but it was hard. It was hard. I know a lot of writers have problems with it too. A lot of people who make art had a problem with it.
What since you'd mentioned reading other books, not I don't, you know, I don't like to assume all writers are readers. You really never know. But do you have like favorite queer books or authors or like things you'd recommend as like a queer starter package of books?
Yes, I definitely do. I am very much a reader, very much a reader of queer books. Like I've been very lucky in the past 2 years. I've been like the judge for lesbian fiction for the Lammys, like the Lambda
Sick.
Literary Awards. So I've been able to like be like, yes, like let's get to read all this like great like lesbian fiction. I love Carmen Maria Machado, which I know like everybody is like a super fan of hers. I'm in like a group chat with her, and she is like always talking about this like new book she's working on, and it sounds freaking amazing. So
Can't
that's
wait.
gonna be really, really good. Big Swiss by Jen Biegan was one that like I thought was like really incredible. I love stuff where it's like people are like not afraid to write about like sex and bodies. And like a book that I always say that I really like so much, which is not like lesbian but is like gay, is like Alexander Chee, who's one of our premier queer writers. Edinburgh, which is like a novel he wrote, that is like the only book that's like made me like openly weep like on a plane. Like I was like, it's a very beautiful book. Yeah, there's I love Samantha Irby, who is so funny. Like she writes all those like really great like essay collections that are just like I always want to be like that funny. It's like kind of like read those books and be like, fuck you for being that funny. Like, how dare you? Ruth Medevsky had a great book that came out this last year called All Night Pharmacy. That was like really good. Like if you like she was before she wrote fiction, she still is like she's a poet also, but she's also a pharmacist. So this book is like the sensibility of like a poet, but it's also like a really fucked up book about sisters living in LA. So it's like a great book. Yeah, I could say like a million more, but
I was gonna say, have
love
you read or heard of Please Stop Trying to Leave Me by Alana Saab? I started reading that, like, listening to that today,
that
and
is
it
in the house right
literally
now. I
is
have not
it?
Yeah, but it's in the house,
It reminded when you were talking about starting to date your wife in 2020, like it's about a writer who starts dating someone right when the pandemic starts, and then like the pandemic, post-pandemic, she's like kind of having like psychosis and like losing it a little bit, and she's like, oh, it's because, you know, like I was supposed to be with this person at the beginning of the like when you were saying everything about starting to date at the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, that's the book I'm reading.
Really
It
crazy,
was
because I'm
kind of funny.
also reading a book based in the like around COVID right now. Wish You Were Here by Jodi Picoult. There is a queer character in it, although like it's not like a queer book, but crazy just how like COVID just became so relevant and it's in the book I'm reading right now. It's so funny.
I'm of the very firm opinion that if we're queer, anything we're reading is queer.
I agree. Even if I'm reading like the straightest book ever, I'm still reading it through
Exactly.
my gay
You can hear
lens.
it a little bit, yeah.
Yes.
So funny.
Were there any queer characters that you related to when you were younger?
The book that made me want to be a writer, which I was like, don't say Dorothy Allison again, because I always am like talking about Dorothy Allison, but Bastard of the Carolina is like my touchstone book, like as a queer person, but also like a queer writer, a queer reader, but just also like as a human being. That book is like very much like about a young girl growing up in South Carolina. And so like that's a book where I read it, like when it was kind of like a light bulb went off in my head. I'm like, oh, you can write like this. Like you can, this is like something you can write. It's not like explicitly queer and like no one's like, I'm coming out, mom, or like no one's like talking about being gay, but it's like queer in the way where it's like a queer person reading it, you recognize your like things in it. Like the character is like very young and she's like very othered throughout the, she's like not like her sister, she's like not like her family. She has like, I really like it resonated a lot with me, but it too is like South Carolina is like bodied in that. Like it's like every part of place is like very, like the book wouldn't be the same if it didn't have South Carolina in it. And it was like the book that made me be like, oh, I want to write about Florida the way that like Dorothy writes about South Carolina. But
That's
also
cool.
writing these like very like specific like coming of age or like of age even characters that are like where you can kind of see glimpses of yourself in it without having to like do specific kinds of stories. Because I think there's like, there's always going to be room for coming out narratives, right? Like because people are coming out forever. Like it's just going to happen like forever and ever. But it was like I loved like seeing the kind of nuance of like I see you in this. Like I see like, because she's obviously, if you're a queer person reading, you're like, oh, she's obviously a young queer person. And then her aunt, her unmarried aunt, who's very different from like the rest of the other sisters, who lives on her own and wears specific kind of clothes and like talks a kind of way and like very much is like, but like what's said about a person, but like what's not said, like what's left out of conversations. And I was like, this is very interesting to me. And it's also a book where it's like very dirty and like there's people that like don't have money in it. And I was like, I'm very like, I was like mind blown, like galaxy brain crazed, like reading that book. So
You're
definitely that
definitely
book for
selling
sure.
me on it.
It's a great book. I mean, it's a, I mean, I think Dorothy Allison is like one of our greatest lesbian writers, right up there with Sarah Schulman. But it is like a, so like it's a treat to reread that book because every time I come back to it, I find some kind of new interesting thing. It's of a time too. It definitely has like, I also like to like approach anything I've read in the past and be like, what is like the lens here that like now I know more, right? Like how is this book race? So I think it's a good to, it's good for me to say too on here. It's like it's good to be like, this is, book is written in a time of a time where there's things in here where it's like I think that there's like some problems with how some things are like with race written in there. But it's important to like recognize and see those things and be like, this is in here and this needs to be like talked about and discussed. So but it is like a quintessential book of like kind of coming of age in like South Carolina as like they're like self-described kind of poor white trash in the book. And yeah, like I don't know, just like young queer people, interesting. But yeah, I love that book. It's like, it definitely is the book that made me want to be a writer. Like I was like, it really was like, kind of like, oh fuck, you can do that. Oh, crazy.
The book with teeth, you're not a parent, right?
I
Or are
am
you a parent?
actually.
You
I
are a parent?
have
Oh,
a,
for some reason I don't know why I thought you weren't, but
oh,
I was wondering where that
No,
came
I think that's a
from?
great question.
Okay.
I only answer it if someone asks me. So it's like I have a 24-year-old son. I
Okay.
had him when I was a teenager, like when I was like graduating from high school. I had him. He's playing tennis with my wife right now. We both
Aw.
play tennis.
Has he read with teeth? And what does he think? Is he
He has
like,
read with teeth,
Mom?
actually. He's been like he listened to it on audiobook. Like he and I had like I was like obviously this is not us because it was like there were like because well I was like a single very young gay parent like raising him and then like the you know the parents in that book are like pretty wealthy well-to-do like deciding to have like a child and like then like you know choosing like a you know owning a home even it's like
Sure.
I was like when I had him I was yeah I was 18 and so I started like working because I'm also a librarian. I started working like days in the library and like was like and then like when he was like in elementary school started going to school at night. And that's how I ended up getting like my degree was I went to night school like after I would work all day. But yeah, it's like he and I have a I think it was kind of we kind of raised each other a little bit. Like I was so young and I didn't know anything about myself and I really knew nothing about myself. Like, I cannot describe to you how little I knew about myself. Like, I feel like just now I kind of know some things, maybe. But yeah, I did have a kid. And so I think it was interesting to write from that perspective because also like I was trying to write from the perspective of somebody who would have a kid in like this kind of traditional, I mean, traditional being an operative, right? Because they're lesbians, but like choosing to have a child and like you know, having the finances and resources to do that, and then like what it would be like if you like did that and you're like, well, I hate this. Like, I don't like it. So yeah, he did read the book and he thought it was really funny, which I think is very telling of my son's sense of humor. It's very much like
Yeah, I think when I described it to Gina, I said it's like a queer version of We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Now, is there somebody in your life that does taxidermy, or was that like where did that storyline come from? Like any self connection there?
That I did not like. Well, I mean, growing up, I knew lots of people who had tax. We had taxidermy in our house, like right, like my dad had like a shellacked bats in the middle of our living room. But it was like, or you go to church and there'd be like deer mounts and shit on the wall. It's like it would be
At
like around all the
church.
time. And I would just be like, oh, like never thought of it or didn't really have any kind of thoughts about it. Then I was working, I was at like a writer's workshop at Kenyon Review, and I was supposed to be writing a short story. And I was interested in like, I'd seen like an image on like what happens to us. Like, right, we see an image online, it kind of sticks in our brain and we think about it a lot. And I'd seen this like horrible piece of taxidermy. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna write like a short story about like a brother and sister who like taxidermy like their family friends like beloved pet goat has died and they're gonna taxidermy it for like the beloved family member and they're gonna like fuck it up so bad and then they're gonna be like so pissed at each other and then throughout the process of them yelling and arguing with each other about this like goat that they have mistreated their like other stuff is gonna come out where it's like it's not just the goat it's like these other underlying things and as I was working on this I was getting excited about like knowing like things about processes of I mean my reference brain like my librarian's brain kind of turned on like like research and so I started doing like a lot of research for the short story which I don't ever do and this story got like too big and I was like oh shit this is like a novel this is like a bigger thing than whatever
This
that
is a long story, not a short
the long story and
story.
so then I was like okay well I'm gonna dive all into this I'm gonna do like what I would do like put my reference hat on and do like what I do at like work for the library and so I got like a million books I went like onto a million websites I'd be working reference and like looking at some horrible videos and be like please don't let somebody come up behind me and see this like thing with a pig and I was just like I was like oh okay but I got really interested in it and the more I was like I would go onto these like web forums where like a lot of hunters would go and it's like a very specific kind of like traditional masculinity like a kind of very gendered thing like a kind of dude that like a cis straight dude who like would hunt and then do taxidermy so it was like I wanted to hear how people like talked and did like best practices like I was like I like write like lingo for taxidermists. If it's not right, I want to see like how people, like practitioners, do it. So I would sit in these web forums and not interact, just like watch. And like they would like, right, like they'd be like, use Windex for this, like don't buy this shit, like it's garbage. I'm like, okay, cool. And then they would like post their things that they'd made. And that's when the kind of like, oh, like a taxidermy came to me in this way, where it was like they would talk, these people would talk, so these men would talk so lovingly and in such intimate detail about these things that they had made. And I was like, oh, this is a way for them to experience art and intimacy without like messing with like their weird gender binary they have going on in their head. And I was like, that's what this is. This is what taxidermy is. So it was like, I did like a prodigious amount of research. I never did taxidermy of my own, but the thing that happened was some people that were working at like the Natural History Museum came to like a book thing, and they were like, "You do taxidermy, right?" And I was like, "No, I don't." They're like, "Oh, we all had a bet going that you definitely did," and because they do taxidermy there, like I feel so vindicated. I feel really vindicated, but I never did any taxidermy of my own. I just did like, I would say an insane amount of research for it to like all kinds of taxidermy. It was like a part of my everyday like parlance. I would go around talking about taxidermy all day. I'm sure people were real done with that.
I love that though. That's like so validating to the amount of effort you put in.
So some of the questions we ask all of our guests, and I wanted kind of like twofold this. Do you have advice for young writers? And then kind of a second part, advice for just young queer people or a younger version of yourself?
Yeah, I would say that my advice for writers is to something I always say to myself and I remind myself of is you are your audience. Like you're your first reader. So if you're writing something, you have to be writing it for you. Anytime I sit down and I'm making something, if I realize that I'm trying to like write to somebody else or trying to make something that I think people will like, then I'm not being like authentic and spending time like making something for myself. So I think that's the most important thing I probably could say is that like when you sit down to write, like write something that you feel like deeply attached to and that you're writing for you as a reader. Because there are going to be people who are also like you and want to read the things that you have written. And it also like a follow-up to that is that like you're just going to get a million rejections. Like I can't tell you how many rejections like I still even get all the time. So it's just like it's like part of the process. It's like you have to keep like pushing through it. Like if it's something that you if publication is something that you want to do, because not every person who's a writer like necessarily wants to do publication. And I think all forms of like writing and publication are extremely valid. Like I know I'm like with a big five publisher, but I think small press is great. I think self-pub is cool. I think like whatever is like serving you in terms of like what you're trying to make is like valuable as long as you know that about yourself. So,
Totally.
but there's always going to be like rejection and things. So it's just kind of pushing through it. And I would say to, oh God, what I say to a young queer version of myself. I think I would scare a young queer version of myself. I was like, oh, I'd be like so, because I think I like all the things about me are the things I was like very afraid of being. So I think I would like, I don't know if I could necessarily approach the young version of myself because I think that the young version of myself would have a panic attack. But I do think that like nobody's gonna care as much as you care. Like so many times I was just like, my life's gonna end and this thing is so horrible. Things embarrassed me all the time. I was so afraid of being embarrassing. And now it's like I cannot be like I know I could be. No, knock on wood. Like, but it's like kind of a thing where it's like the person that's gonna care the most about any weird, dumb thing you do or any kind of thing where it's like make mistakes and you know, it's like you care more than anybody else. And so if you keep that in mind, I think it's like can be helpful in the midst of still feeling bad and still feeling embarrassed, is to know that like it will pass and that it's mostly just you that's like feeling the weight of your embarrassment and shame. Yeah.
I needed to hear that today, so I'm sure other people listening did too. So where can our listeners find you, and is there anything else you need to plug or want to plug right now?
I'm still on that godforsaken application, twitter.com, which I will not call the other name. I think I'm just going to be there till it crumbles around me like a like an unholy castle. And
Same.
then I am on Instagram, which my same name, like Kristen Arnett. And the thing I think I will plug, I guess, is that I have a new novel coming out in March. I'm gonna
Yay.
do like a cover reveal for it, like coming up like this week or so. It's called Stop Me if you've heard this one. It's about a lesbian birthday party clown in Central Florida. It's a
Stop.
clown book. It's so it's all about like clowning. And it's like a comedy book. It's not scary or anything. I mean, if you have clown phobia, then like maybe it will freak you out a little bit. But I would also say it's a very horny book. So it's like very like it's very jokey, but it's also about like because the protagonist is very into clowning and considers it like a very form of high art. So the idea about like what to do when like you consider the thing you're making to be art and other people consider it to like be a weird hobby or like don't take it seriously and like artistic practice. So, but I hope it's like a I think it's a really funny book because I was like I'm gonna write a clown book. So
Yeah.
it's a lot of clown, I will say. Yeah.
Horny gay
Hell yeah.
clown
Yeah.
representation.
Yes.
Yes, I love that. All right. Well, if you want to leave us any questions for future guests, for future episodes, we have a phone number. You can leave us a message at 724-209-7372. You can find us on social media at Sapphic Survival Guide, except for Twitter slash X, just at Sapphic Survival. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. And we are also on Patreon, patreon.com/Sapphic Survival Guide. You can also send us messages at sapphicsurvivalguide@gmail.com. And you can find me, Cheyenne, at Hot Mess Bean on pretty much any social media platform.
And you can find me anywhere online at The Lieb Regina, including my website, theliebregina.com. And with that, class is now dismissed.